Back up top, shot through traffic, save made. Follow-up try, that one hits a body in front, and a score! It's a score! It's a score! And the Ice Bears have a 4-3 lead with 30 seconds remaining in the hockey game. Oh, what a hit! Welcome to the SPHL in Knoxville! Comes in on the right side, through the right circle, taking it and fed across, they score! Oh, yes! And the Ice Bears win 3-2 in overtime!
Welcome to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. I appreciate you taking the time to check out the KIB podcast, whether you are doing so on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. A lot to get to today. Knoxville season officially concluded on Saturday night with the wrap-up of the regular season, and the playoffs begin on Tuesday. Got an earlier start for that Roanoke Quad City series, so wanted to make sure to get a episode in before the postseason actually began. There's a lot to look forward to over the course of the next week with four playoff series that I think all of them carry a decent amount of intrigue. I think we have a very deep field this year, and of course we'll put a bow on what was the Knoxville Ice Bears season. So starting with Knoxville, Ice Bears get swept in a home-and-home series with Roanoke. They lose 3-0 on Friday night. They lose 7-2 on Saturday at home. And it was kind of a tale of two games. I thought Knoxville offensively on Friday night, it was very similar to what we saw last Saturday against Huntsville. Despite the fact that the results were the same, a pair of 3-0 losses, it was a close game deep into the third period. A couple of late goals by Huntsville and Roanoke in those scenarios ultimately led to a 3-0 shutout. But I thought on Friday, Knoxville generated chances. It had three power play opportunities, including a 5-minute power play after a kneeing major was assessed to John McDonald at the end of the second period. And Knoxville moved the puck around really well. I thought Austin Rodebush had a really good night in net. There were some great chances in that Friday loss for Knoxville that just weren't converted. Troy Murray a couple of times almost found a way to sneak the puck past Austin Rodebush. Cole McKechnie had a couple of really good looks, including on the power play, that one-timer from the hash that Rodebush was able to track. And just not enough, you know, just not enough there to ultimately get over the hump. And, you know, it's one thing when a goalie's having a really good night in net, but also when you've had the season that Knoxville has, sometimes those bounces just don't go your way. And that's sort of the luck and the fortune that you have sometimes. So, you know, offensively, it was obviously very tough to describe it as a positive performance. But when you look at what Knoxville, you know, some of the chances that they set themselves up for, you know, shots on goal were relatively even. They were in it. You know, players actually seemed a little optimistic about how they played. And so it wasn't for a lack of trying, because in both those games against Huntsville and Roanoke, shots on goal were fairly equal. Both teams had power play chances. Knoxville just didn't execute. But it wasn't, you know, like previous games where Knoxville's just spending an inordinate amount of time in its own zone chasing after the puck and then having to deal with second and third chance opportunities. And that's been kind of the theme that we saw a lot this season. But in those two games, that really wasn't the scenario. And then on Saturday, Knoxville, yeah, maybe getting outplayed a little bit through the first 20, but Christian Stead's having a good night in net. Sonato gets that goal late in the period to give the Ice Bears a 1-0 lead at the break. And then immediate penalty almost directly off the opening faceoff in the second period. Roanoke doesn't score on the power play, but they score shortly after. The puck never leaves the zone. It stays in there. Roanoke takes advantage. Josh Nenadol pokes through a loose puck after a net front scramble. And the rail yard dogs kind of roll from there. And so in that second period, you see Knoxville give up 5 unanswered, and the game kind of starts to get away from Knoxville. And Jonathan Bartuccio Pereira with a nice coast-to-coast goal that helped Knoxville stop the bleeding. But by then, it was a little too late. And so just kind of a game that got away from Knoxville. And you know, Knoxville's season ends with a last-place finish after. It's just wild when you think about how the standings shaped out, because Knoxville ended the season on an 11-game losing streak, all 11 losses in regulation. The Ice Bears finish in last place by 1 point. And so it's just kind of what it was of, you know, you get one win over those, really just 1 point over those 11 games. And, you know, you technically take the tiebreaker over Macon because Knoxville had more wins, and you you know, finishing ninth. Not that that's much of a consolation prize, but it really, I think, just goes to show how tough the end of the season was for this team and how unfortunate it was when you consider that Knoxville went 6-4 in the month of February, was less than a period and a half away from going 7-3, loses a 3-goal lead to Huntsville, ends up losing that game, and then from the month of March onward, gets one win that was in overtime. And it just, you know, Knoxville didn't have a regulation win since mid-February against Macon, because its final two wins after that 3-2 win over the Mayhem were a shootout win against Pensacola and then an overtime win against Roanoke. So it kind of just a bizarre ending to the season after Knoxville gets this, you know, they blow the lead to Huntsville. They lose 12-3 the following night to Roanoke, the worst loss in franchise history, and then come back and beat the Railyard Dogs on the road to get to within 3 points of the Thunderbolts with a game in hand. And suddenly it's playing out like, hey, maybe Knox will be able to compete and, you know, the schedule is going to be tough, but maybe they can scrap something together. It just didn't happen. Knoxville lost all 11 games by multiple goals. Only one of those losses was by 2 goals. And that was a 5-3 loss to Huntsville. All the other 10 games were by 3 goals or more. It was just a really, really tough ending to the regular season for Knoxville. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Look, it was a terrible, terrible season for the Ice Bears. And the players know that. The players own it. Head coach Andrew Harrison knows it. GM president Mike Murray knows it. I mean, the organization is owning it. It was not up to the standards of what Ice Bears hockey is supposed to be. And, you know, for Knoxville, now the task becomes going through exit interviews, evaluating which players you want to put on the protected list, which ones you want to keep, figuring out which one of those players want to come back, which players are you keeping to help build a core for next season, which players are you maybe keeping for trade collateral, which players are you probably expecting to move on from? And that's something that the organization's going to have to go through right now and make those decisions over the course of the next few weeks and, you know, find out, okay, how do we move forward from here? And then the offseason recruiting begins. So, you know, it's an earlier offseason for Knoxville than typically expected. And it was a much tougher season for Knoxville than typically expected. And so, you know, there are positives that you can take out of it to a degree of, you know, what you can build towards next season. I think Knoxville has a you know, pieces on the roster that showed themselves over the course of the last couple of weeks of guys that can be a part of the solution moving forward. I don't think Knoxville has to start entirely from scratch. I think you saw, you know, just going down the line here numerically with the forwards, especially Derek Osick, you know, he had a hat trick in March. He had that really strong weekend in mid-March and overall had a pretty decent month as a whole, was producing, was consistently being involved, was setting up the offense, especially with that first line. And then Anthony Sonato coming in certainly helped with that and kind of gave Osick two guys on the perimeter that he could try to work with, whether it was Smunt, Sonato, McKinney, some combination of those three guys. And so I thought Osick had a pretty promising March. Anthony Sonato, I think, showcased his ability. You know, he got that goal on Saturday night right before the end of the first period, so showed that he can utilize his speed to get into the slot. He can set guys up. He can score from the perimeter. He can be utilized on the power play. I think those things are important. You know, mentioned Smunt. He has shown that he's got a really good shot on the power play and knows what to do with the puck. And so there's obviously the potential that is there to continue to evolve his game. And I think he's coming off a fairly promising rookie season and, you know, understands that there's always going to be progression for guys moving from their rookie season to their second season. And so I think there's some talent that's certainly there. You look at Dawson McKinney and see the rookie season that he had, obviously finished it on the IR, but you see guys like him and Tyler Rolo who were banged up at times, but I think they both showcase the sort of games that they can possess. If Tyler Rolo plays like he did in that March 15th loss to Fayetteville, where he had 2 assists, kept finding quality passing lanes, setting guys up for good scoring chances, and also had 6 shots on goal, so he can kind of do, you know, be a do-it-all type of guy in the O-zone. And, you know, towards the beginning of the season, we saw how contributing he could be defensively. And then with McKinney, you know his shot. He can score in multiple ways, handles the puck well, wins battles along the wall, doesn't give up on plays. You know, I think there's obviously a good amount of potential there. You look at some of the guys on defense. Brendan Daller, he's tough, he's physical, he's got good size, he has good recovery speed, doesn't back down from trying to clear the crease, you know, tries to follow his assignments well. I think you look at Jonathan Bertuccio Pereira, he's very methodical. It feels like he understands how to slow the game down for himself, to make the easy play, tries to simplify his game, and I think on the back end, you need defensemen that are going to do those things. Cody Schwartz, Kyle Soper, you know, with Schwartz, he's an excellent passer, makes really good, crisp, tape-to-tape passes, and finds a way to get himself out of trouble whenever he's backed up into his own end. There are several times this year where he kind of would be pinned by two guys. He's trying to get the puck off the wall, and somehow he just sneaks out of the double team and creates a breakout. And Soper, he's not afraid to carry the length of the ice on his own, and he can make guys miss. He's shifty. He's agile. You know, you have physical players like Troy Murray and Matthew Belar, and with, you know, what those guys can do. And Belar, he's going to be your protector out there on the ice. You know, he's not going to let the star players get cheap-shotted. Murray did a really good job at adjusting his game when the team needed him to play forward. And I think for, you know, somebody to be able to do that with as frequently as he had to, you know, there were times where he was trying to make the effort play or be a contributor, showed that he could be a good passer in the offensive zone. So you're not completely starting from scratch here if you're Knoxville. And then, of course, Christian Stead and Zane Steves ending the season on the roster. I think everybody knows what those guys are capable of. Obviously, the structure has to change. It, you know, make life a little bit easier on the goaltenders. And then moving forward, you hope that you can work with a number of these pieces to try to build something moving into next year. And so even Ryan Crothers, you know, in Fayetteville, his first season, as successful as they've been, obviously he brought in a wealth of new talent, but he didn't completely start from scratch. There'd be a couple of guys that were there the year before and, you know, brought in some talented rookies who have had good rookie seasons. So it's it's all a formula of trying to put it all together. And so what Knoxville is going to have to do going into next season, obviously things have to change, things have to be better, but you don't have to completely blow up absolutely everything. You don't have to wipe the slate entirely clean, because you do have some players that want to be in Knoxville. I think there are players that Knoxville wants to have back next year, and it's just finding the right combination. But then also there has to be some upgrades made to the roster as a whole through offseason recruiting, which players are going to decide to leave, what needs do you have to replace, and then how do you kind of go about doing that over the course of the year. And so, again, nobody in the organization is content with what happened. You know, it's not just a matter of, you know, obviously you have to handle the business side of things. You have to sell tickets. You have to sell merchandise. You have to be able to make money for the organization. But at the end of the day, you know, it starts with up top. The GM and president is a former player. He's, you know, a former Ice Bear himself, played for the Cherokees, played in the NHL, won championships at the professional level, at the major junior level. You know, Mike Murray's very, very competitive, and he's not going to just sit there all summer hoping that the problem fixes itself. And so I think where we see, you know, the team be from 6 months from now is going to look very different than how it did this past year. And that's the norm in this league. I mean, even successful teams deal with a lot of roster turnover from one season to the next, whether there's a coaching change, whether guys just decide, you know, want to go try making an offer overseas, or guys, you know, think they have a chance at the coast, or guys just decide, yeah, you know, I did this, I'm done. It's, you know, it's been a good run, wanted to try pro hockey, and now I'm going to go on to the next stage of my life. So different players retire for different reasons. And you know, there's no real way to know. Sometimes you figure it out. Sometimes guys know immediately. Sometimes guys want to take the summer to think about it. So it's a matter of kind of waiting out and seeing which players are going to be available. And then how do you go recruit the new guys, whether it's from other pro leagues overseas, whether it's from the LNAH up in Canada, whether it's college kids, whether it's, you know, players from other SPHL teams that are wanting a change of scenery. And so it's going to be very, very different, I think, 6 months from now when October rolls back around to see what this team is going to look like. But certainly appreciate all the support that we got from the Knoxville community. Obviously, would have loved to have been able to bring more wins to Knoxville this season. But all in all, look, it was our second highest attendance year in franchise history. And considering the results, what they were, I think that's really impressive. It's a kudos to our ticket staff, but it's also a huge thank you to the city and to East Tennessee for helping us do what it is that we do, and trying to provide, you know, an entertaining product for the fans. And, you know, if you're a diehard hockey fan, you're thinking, okay, well, the product on the ice was a little tough to watch at home this season. And Knoxville's home record wasn't good, but, you know, the idea is that's why the promotions are so important. That's why the rebrands are so important. And that stuff is thought of by our front office staff and, you know, the promotions team that does a great job of thinking of all that stuff during the summer and then putting it into action during the course of the season. So very thankful to everybody for continuing to come out to games. And, you know, the intent is to make the on-ice product better next season and to have a better team and to win more games and to get back to competing again at a high level to be in the mix when this, you know, time next year comes around again. So we've got the first round of the playoffs starting on Tuesday. Roanoke takes on Quad City in the 3-6 matchup. And so the Rail Yard Dogs will start things off going to Moline on Tuesday, and then they will get games 2 and 3 if necessary Friday and Saturday back at the Berglund Center. So that is the one series that we have starting on Tuesday. The other three will begin on Wednesday, and the postseason could run as late as Sunday, depending on what happens between Fayetteville and Huntsville. So let's start from the top. The William B. Coffey Trophy winners, Birmingham, they just capped off one of the more impressive regular seasons in SPHL history. It was a very, very impressive regular season. 85 points. That's only 5 points shy of the all-time record set by Peoria back in 2019. 38 wins. Very, very good season. Peoria with 37 right behind them, 6 points back, with Birmingham having 9 post-regulation losses. It was a very, very good season for Craig Simchuk's team. And they go in to the postseason on an 8-0-2 run. So have not had a regulation loss in their last 10 games, but did get a couple of really tough games to end the regular season from their first-round opponent, the Evansville Thunderbolt. So Evansville gets a huge boost late in the season by getting Cole Ceci back. So he returns from a lengthy stint in the ECHL. They will face off Wednesday night in Birmingham. They'll go to Evansville for game 2 on Thursday. And then if they split, Saturday will be back at the Pelham Civic Complex on Saturday. So for Evansville, you know, the key is obviously going to be trying to find a way to slow down that Birmingham attack. And Cole Ceci, can he go in and steal a game? And this is where you kind of, where it feels a little too short with these best of 3 game series, but it's a Wednesday night. And, you know, you can never tell what the crowd is going to be like on these Wednesday playoff games because it's not on the schedule that far in advance. It's not like the other regular season games. You don't necessarily have a major set in stone promotion because you don't know what the date's going to be and what sort of logistics are going to have to go into that. And teams prepare as best they can across the board to make sure that you've got entertainment going on along with the game. I know for a lot of the fans, the focus is on the result of the game itself, but you know, obviously you want to have a big crowd at every home playoff game that you have. You know, it's a weekday in some cases. So, you know, fans, if they're used to going on the Friday, Saturday games, you know, Wednesday, it can be a little bit different. So, you know, sometimes there are playoff games where the attendance isn't great. Sometimes the attendance stays strong depending on the team and how far in advance you get to know and the market and the fan base. And not every market's the same. So you kind of have this, you almost look at it as an opportunity if you're the lower-seeded team here. Can you go steal a game on Wednesday and then get a chance to clinch at home the following night? And that's what Evansville can potentially do here if they go and they compete and you just got to see Birmingham twice, so your players are able to kind of replay those games in their mind. You know what to expect now. You're already in the mindset of preparing for that opponent. So it makes it very intriguing just with the layout of the schedule and how the regular season played out. Now, Birmingham has a lot to play for this season. Obviously, they're the number one seed. They arguably have the best forward group from top to bottom in the league. Now, I think Peoria and Roanoke could both lay a claim to that and make an argument there just in terms of the overall depth of it. But they do have good top-end scoring with Carson Rose and Drake Glover. Evansville, you know, the result comes about the back end is how they can shut teams down and what they can do defensively to try to slow that down. And they have played well, very well, as a matter of fact, against Birmingham this year. The Thunderbolts went 3-3-1 against Birmingham. So they actually won 3 of the first 5 meetings before dropping these final 2 to end the regular season. So this, you know, on paper, as much as it looks like it should be in Birmingham's favor, I don't know if it's as much of a cakewalk when you consider how these two teams have played against each other. So, you know, Hayden Stewart is likely going to find himself on either the first team or the second team all SPHL selection when it comes out later this month. And then you have Cole Ceci, who had one of the more solid rookie campaigns for any rookie goaltender this year. Only played in 21 games because of how much he was in the ECHL. But I think this 1-8 matchup is, it's intriguing. And I think it could now, Birmingham could raise their game to another level, and they could find a way to go out and pull away from Evansville early, and we could be talking about a 48-hour sweep. But I just think with the way that Evansville has been scrappy against Birmingham, it always offers just a little bit of a question mark about how the series could play out. So again, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, if necessary, for the 1-8 matchup, Birmingham and Evansville. Moving on to the 2-7 matchup, Peoria and Pensacola. This is the third year in a row that these two teams have faced off in the first round of the President's Cup playoffs. Peoria has won each of the prior two series, took three games back in 2022. It was a sweep back in 2023, and now they meet in 2024, also a different seed line for each matchup. It was the 1-8 matchup last year, the 3-6 matchup the year before. So kind of funny there. Now we get them as a 2-7. This will be Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, so you get a day between games 1 and 2. Game 1 will be in Pensacola on Wednesday, and then they'll head back to Peoria for games 2 and 3, if necessary, Friday and Saturday. I think, obviously, the big storyline kind of gets a little bit watered down because you have the whole situation of the major trade that happened right around the halfway point of the season with Pensacola swapping players with Peoria, and it looked pretty notable because Joseph Widmar was Peoria's leading scorer at the time, and then he gets traded to Pensacola, and suddenly, along with Dale Dion, and suddenly it's, wow, this is a kind of a significant trade. You know, what is Jean-Guy Trudel wanting, you know, trying to kind of show here? And Peoria just continued to be really, really solid the rest of the way. They got production from a number of guys just across the board. Zach Wilkie had a big season again back on the blue line. They limit the number of times that teams can shoot the puck. Nick Latinovich had a great season in net. And so, you know, for Peoria, didn't really miss a beat. For Pensacola, ultimately ended up as the number 7 seed. And then Joseph Widmar gets put on team suspension towards the end of the regular season. So he is unavailable for this postseason run. And you're looking at some of your returners that have been around for a little while. You're looking at Garrett Milland, who is now the franchise's all-time leader in goals. You're looking at a guy like Mitch Adkins, who's been the player of the week a couple times this year. Ivan Bondarenko, who continues to be one of the best setup wingers in the league. Sean Golka, who's a big body out there. Malik Johnson, who's a returner who's been part of this team in the past. And then you look back at the defensive core. You have really good defensemen in Cooper Jones, Jordan Henderson. And then you've had consistency with guys like Troy Button, Zach Herman, Dale Dion since the trade. They brought in Tim Faulkner last month. So there's pieces here for Pensacola that, you know, there's some of these guys remember this back and forth that's been going on. And then, you know, Andrew Durham, who's played in Peoria, and some of these guys that were a part of that trade and want to maybe get a little bit of payback for, you know, the idea of, hey, you believe that you were better off without us, and now this is our opportunity to end your season in the first round. But most importantly for Pensacola, Steven Mundinger's been playing his best hockey towards the end of the season. And you saw him kind of climb up some of those leaderboards in terms of save percentage, goals against average, and Pensacola started playing better hockey at times. When you look at how the end of the season, obviously ending the year on a 3-game skid is not what you wanted, but that also came at a time where Pensacola really didn't have anything to play for, because it's not like they could have caught up to Quad City for the number 6 seed. So you're trying to fine tune things, and so you can't read entirely into the results. Pensacola started the year off really hot at home and was a pretty solid home team throughout the course of the year. 17-9-2 on the season at home. So you know, overall, it's a pretty good home record. And I think for Peoria, obviously, they had one of the best records in the league at home this season, but you still have to go on the road. Tough environment in Pensacola, and you know the history there with the Ice Flyers. Regardless of what happens in the regular season, they have a tendency to play their best hockey in April. And even though that hasn't been the results that they've wanted the last two seasons, you've got third year in a row against the same franchise that's knocked you out the last 2 years. Is it going to happen a third time? Now, for Peoria, on the flip side of that, I think this might be the best team that Jean-Guy Trudel has had with the Rivermen in the time that he's been there. And I know that they just won a title 2 years ago, but I think the difference is there's so much depth up front with what they can do offensively. I think, you know, Alec Hageman, I think he continues to play at a high level, even though from, you know, this is expected to be the end for him. Had a goal and an assist in his final regular season game. And so if this truly is, you know, finally the end for Alec Hageman, the longtime Peoria captain, he'll end his career as a five-time all SPHL selection. He's going to try to chase his third SPHL title, his second with the Rivermen, and he'll end his career as the third all-time leading scorer in the history of the SPHL. So there's obviously, you know, a lot to play for. It's going to be an emotional playoff run for Peoria because it is possibly Alec Hageman's last ride. I think there's going to be a bit of a chip on everybody's shoulder because of what happened last year. Peoria was the number one seed, lost in the semifinals to Roanoke. Roanoke went on to win the title. So there's always that idea of, okay, we're not done yet. We've got to go back and finish business. And not only that, but it's a team full of guys that won that title a couple years ago. J.M. Petrowski, Caden Cahill, I thought, has been really good over the last 2 years for Jean-Guy Trudel's team. Jordan Ernst had a really solid season. Joseph Drapluck is a veteran center that knows how to play at a high level. And then, of course, Hageman, then Alec Bear, the former MVP. Defensively, it's a shutdown team that really prevents teams from being able to consistently get shots on goals. Zach Wilkie is going to be in the running for Defenseman of the Year. He's likely going to be a first-team All-SPHL selection. Nick Latinovich is an all-league goalie this season and led the league with 7 shutouts. That's the second most all-time in a single season by any goaltender. So, you know, if Pensacola can get guys free, it's going to need its veteran forwards to be able to make plays. It's going to need Garrett Milan to have a huge series if it wants to move on. Because defensively, Peoria has been so locked down throughout the entire course of the season, and they have guys that have been a part of this before. And Braden Parker with Wilkie, Cale List. And I think when you look more and more at what Peoria can do in such a balanced fashion, it makes them so tough. And that's why I think that this might be the best team they've ever had. And so even though you don't necessarily have all of these, you know, 50, 60 point scorers like they did a couple years ago when Hageman had 71 points, Bear had an 80 point season, what you do have is five forwards that have 40 point seasons. And you have Zach Wilkie, who is among the league leaders in points by a defenseman. And so I think whenever you have a team that can get scoring across the board, I think when you get to the postseason, okay, you may not see all of the all-SPHL selections that maybe that team deserves, but when you see how deep that team is, 2 50-point scorers, 6 players with 40 points or more, and then Joseph Widmar had 30 points in 21 games before he was traded. Cale List had a 28-point season from the blue line, and then players that weren't available as much. Ryan Nolan, 20 points in 24 games. Mike Gillette, 27 points in 34 games. Braden Barker, 21 points as a defenseman. I think it's a really, really solid team. And, you know, obviously, not all those guys are available, but just kind of showing that this is a team with a structure that can get. I know, you know, Ryan Nolan's not listed on the playoff roster, but just kind of pointing out that the number of guys that were able to produce. And, you know, guys that aren't available, or a guy like Joseph Widmar, who Peoria opted to move on from. And so it really goes to show, and I don't want to say, oh, these are just system guys. These are very, very good players that are playing in a very, very good system that all know how to have success, all know how to handle success, and are very deep from top to bottom, especially on their front line, and have the goaltender to carry them into a deep playoff run. So, again, I'm not necessarily saying Peoria has the best chance of any team in the field to win the cup this year, but I do think, just on paper, I think this is the best team that Peoria has ever put on the ice. And it doesn't mean that they'll win it. It, you know, obviously doesn't mean that they won't win it, but I think it just kind of goes to show the product that Jean-Guy Trudel has built for his team to have success this season. Moving on to that 6-3 matchup, already mentioned it at the start of this segment, but Roanoke and Quad City, I think this is the series that probably gives me the most intrigue, that I'm most excited to see, because Quad is a very good 6 seed and did not end the season the way that they would have wanted to. When you're talking about the opportunity to have home ice advantage, you fall 3 points back of fourth place where Fayetteville is, end the season 5-4-1 after they were so hot through February. I think they were hoping that they were going to be able to climb into home ice advantage, but also dealt with a little bit of roster attrition. And then you look back at what they're going to be doing going into the postseason. Matt Eustaski is on the playoff roster. Dylan Fournier is on the playoff roster. Those were two guys that they were kind of without for a little while. Patrick Marcinkiewicz spent a good portion of March suspended. He's now back and available. Leif Mattsson had a phenomenal year. And so it's a very good team that has talent. And it's going to need its good players to step up in a big way. You have good depth pieces with Logan Nelson and Whelan Parrish. I think defensively, you have good leadership with a guy like Alex Pomerville. And I think you know what you're getting out of Elliott St. Pierre. And then Fournier had a really good season. He's an all-SPHL candidate. Trevor Moment had a really strong year. So there are players there that can make plays. I think it's going to be a very physical series. And I think if Quad City can kind of work some of the magic that they did a couple years ago when they were the lower seed in that first round series against Fayetteville, you know, maybe they can make this difficult on Roanoke and Brett Moran, much like Steven Mundinger in Pensacola. Brett Moran playing some of his best hockey going into the playoffs. Now, the task at hand is what Roanoke brings to the table across the board. And you heard me talk about it last week. I think Matt O'Day's the best defenseman in the SPHL, even though he's been playing forward lately. I think Brendan Pepe's most deserving of the Defenseman of the Year award. But you look at what they've got just across the board on their blue line alone. Steven Alvo, CJ Valerian, veteran guys who have been in the system for a while, who understand what it takes to win. Troy Quinn, Aiden Gerdukas, younger guys that can contribute, that came on later in the season, that have been very, very good. John McDonald, very strong rookie season. Billy Roach can shoot from the blue line. I think you have to really like what Roanoke has on defense. And then, of course, Austin Rodebush, statistically, not his best regular season, and I don't think he really cares. I think, and not that he doesn't want to do better, but we've seen Rodebush have really strong regular seasons. We've seen him have good regular seasons, and then last year saw him have a great postseason, and I think everybody in that room understands when we get to the playoffs, Austin Rodebush is our guy, and we strongly believe that he can steal games for us. And I think him, the performance that he had in his regular season finale on Friday, because it's not just, okay, yeah, well, he shut out the last place team in the league. Yes, but he had to make multiple diving saves, stop multiple rebounds, multiple cross-ice attempts off one-timers that were great setup opportunities for Knoxville. He needed a game like that. I think every goalie wants to have a game like that going into the postseason, because think about what that does for his confidence. And you see Rodebush in net. He already has the swagger of a really confident goaltender, but you're talking about a playoffs MVP and coming off his second shutout of the year going into the postseason. That is the last thing that any Roanoke opponent should want to see going into the playoffs, is a strong defensive effort and Austin Rodebush playing really, really good hockey. And then you look up front. You have the veteran leadership with guys like Mac Jansen, CJ Stubbs, Josh Nenadol. So you have older guys that have a ton of buy-in, who have already gotten a championship. They're still hungry for more. That makes it a lot easier for the younger guys to follow their lead. Alex DeCarlo's had a really good rookie season. Brendan Stanko, I think, has been really impressive when he's been healthy. Tommy Munichello, a nice addition from Macon. I think Dominik Marcinkiewicz might be the best player on the ice. The last several times that I've watched Roanoke play, I think Marcinkiewicz just stands out above everybody else. I know that Stubbs is leading goal scorer. I know that Jansen's the captain. I know that Stanko can make plays happen up the perimeter. I know that McDade is a force to be reckoned with around the crease. I know that Kelly is a potential firecracker when it comes to scoring goals, where he can just go off and suddenly he's got two on the night. I think Marcinkiewicz, ultimately, his combination of speed and offense and his ability to shoot the puck might be the best player on the ice for Roanoke when they're doing what they want to do systematically on offense. He can be helpful on the penalty kill. He can be helpful on the power play. And then in 5-on-5, he knows how to create space and create shots for himself. And he's not going to let himself get pushed around just because of his size. He's not afraid to go towards contact. He's not afraid to go to the net front. But he can also create space on the perimeter. He can find passing lanes. He had 4 assists on Saturday night against Knoxville, but he can also go out and score. He's got a very effective shot. I think Roanoke is going to be really tough to contend with in the postseason, but this particular series, I think, is about as good of a matchup for any lower-seeded team in the field because of how physical Quad City can be. I think it could help them slow the game down a little bit. And then how does Dan Bremner, how do these guys kind of make some adjustments? I think it's going to be a real chess match between Bremner and Shinichny. And so even though you're looking at the talent and the pieces on the ice, I think both teams have good goaltending. Both teams have defensive players that you can rely on. And I think both teams have strong offensive weapons up at forward that can potentially make plays. So I think it ultimately comes down to which coach kind of out masterminds the other. Because I think from a coaching standpoint, it's a really intriguing matchup as well. And then you've got the 4-5 matchup, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Fayetteville and Huntsville. So Fayetteville started to get it together towards the end of the season. They finished the year going 6-3-1 after a 10-game skid, swept Pensacola to close out the regular season. Simon Boyko coming back is a huge help for them there. So they get game one at Huntsville. They have to go on the road, and it'll be at the Huntsville Ice Sports Center, the practice facility for the Havoc. So they won't play that game at Props Arena. That's going to be a Wednesday night game. Knoxville had to play a playoff game there last year. The one thing that's notable about it is that the ceiling's kind of low. So if you're a defense that likes to flip dump the puck out of the zone, be prepared to have a lot of faceoffs in your own end because you are going to hit that ceiling again and again and again. And then games 2 and 3, if necessary, are back at Crown Coliseum on Friday and Sunday. So for Fayetteville, I think the over... arching theme is obviously the offense is surrounded by Simon Boyko. Cameron Cook has been named to the playoff roster. He was injured during the month of March. You've got Max Johnson in the lineup. Todd Gehring coming off a good weekend. I think looking at Tyler Barrow, who's been really good on the wing, there are certainly the players there. And then Grant Lovins had a really good rookie season. I think when you look at defensively what these guys can potentially bring to the table, Matt Arujo's had a really solid rookie season. Hudson Lambert's a very physical rookie that's just coming out of college. Nick Parody's been with that team throughout the course of the year. They recently picked up Sean Leonard, named him to the playoff roster. And then you have Jamie Dorsey, the former Macon Mayhem defenseman. So you have a couple, you've got physicality on that back end as well. And I think Huntsville is very much a finesse team that likes to try to create space. And so if Fayetteville's able to take the body on Huntsville, is that how they kind of create some advantage for themselves to be able to come out strong in this series? And then can Simon Boyko kind of take things over? And if not, can he draw attention to himself to set things up for Gehring, Johnson, Lovin, Cook, and the rest of that offense to be able to make some plays? Ryan Kenny, I think, has had a good rookie season. And what sort of level is he able to play to going into his first playoff series? I think there's always that question mark whenever you have rookie goaltenders, but I think you have to like what Fayetteville brings to the table, but you have to really like what Huntsville brings as well. And now this is really interesting because I talked last week about how Huntsville, they've got a really good young core. And fifth place isn't where anybody wants to end up. You always want to be higher. You want to have home ice advantage. But for Stuart Stefan, the way that they transitioned from DeTullio to Stefan, I think Huntsville fans have to be really excited about this team long term. But that doesn't mean you can't be excited about this week because you've got the Elks Dams, Doug and Phil. Buster Larson's been a phenomenal pickup from Fayetteville. Kyle Clark, I thought, had a really strong March. Jack Yannick possesses a lot of physical traits that could really be a weapon down the line because of how speedy he is. He's a good puck handler, but I think guys like David Thompson, Dylan Stewart, Benito Posa, they've got a good forward group. And it's a lot of really solid players. Cole Reginato's back in the lineup after serving a suspension, so there are, and then you have a little bit more veteran experience with a guy like Robbie Fisher. And then, of course, Clark's been around for a couple of years there as well. So you have players that I think are feeling good about the way that they're playing right now. Huntsville definitely finished the season stronger than it started. And I think there's reason for optimism for the Havoc going into this series in that 5-4 matchup. Defensively, I've always been high on Alex Kilcheski. Derek Pearl's been there for a while. Mason Palmer was a part of the team last year. Matt Duran, a part of the team last year. And then I think with getting Brett Humberstone out of Wisconsin Stevens Point late in the year, he's been a good contributor. And then I love the goaltending tandem with Mike Robinson and Brian Wilson. And I think the toughest decision might be who do you start in net? Because at times Wilson's been great, and at times Robinson's been locked down. He's been really, really good since coming back from Nottingham for the Havoc, and Wilson's been there the entire season. So I think you feel good about both your goalies. I think you'd be good about, you know, what you have across the board. Huntsville's a very balanced scoring team. They can push the tempo. They can set up the OZP. They can let their defensemen fire from the blue line. They fight for net front presence. They make it hard on goalies to fight through screens. So I think the 4-5 matchup could go either way. I'm not going to make any formal predictions about what could happen, but I think just the excitement is about seeing a fairly young team go into a playoff series for the first time together and seeing what sort of product you get, because I think it's going to tell you a lot. If you have a lot of success, then you get really excited about what you're going to have long term, because you have all these young guys and a new head coach, and it looks like the culture is going to continue to be successful. But if Huntsville loses this series, then it at least opens up some windows of like, okay, well, what do we need to improve on? Because we obviously did a ton of really good things this year, so how do we make it great going into next season? So if you're a Huntsville fan, you can kind of look at it optimistically either way. Obviously, you're focusing this week on beating Fayetteville because you want to win the series, but certainly think Huntsville is capable of doing that. But just with this matchup in particular, I think it's going to be very intriguing as to how it plays out. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. Thank you so much for doing so. It's been a fun regular season, and we'll be excited to see how the playoffs shape out starting on Tuesday with Roanoke and Quad City, and then the other three series in the first round will get started on Wednesday night. Thank you so much for listening to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, however you get your podcast. Make sure to tell a hockey fan you know about the KIB podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you again for listening. This has been the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast.